MechCast, Monday, April 27th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Yeah, I know. One right after the other. Hey, strange times call for strange MechCasts, I guess is how it goes. Yeah, I had an opportunity come up, set something up for you that I was just excited to get out and share. So here we are a day later. If you didn't hear the last episode of the MechCast, it should be on your feed, and it's right in front of this one. So that's kind of the regular weekly MechCast. This one's a little bit of a special one because there's some podcasting friends that I have had since the early days of podcasting, Victor Cahiao and Ken Ray from macOS Ken. And I kind of have been feeling lonely, I'll have to admit. I'm here with my family, which is great and awesome, but I need to geek out with some geeky friends and nerd friends every once in a while. And I wanted to get the guys back together and do a Three Amigos episode. We have had many of you ask when we were going to do that again, and we're going to do it now. So super excited. We're not going to delay anything. We're just jump right in. I got Victor and Ken on the line, and we just geeked out on technology stuff and entertainment and computers, and we just kind of, the idea was to sit down, have a conversation, and just see where it goes. So that's what this episode is. I hope you really, really enjoy it. I certainly had a ton of fun recording it. So here you go. Latest Three Amigos MechCast. Hey, Victor. Hey, Ken. How you guys doing?
How does one answer that question at this point, Adam? I'm healthy.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess we're all in the same state, more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
The state of here is a good thing these days.
State of being, surviving, getting through it, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, almost everybody I know is fine. I have one friend who's, not, but she is, but she's been diagnosed. But, I mean, I count myself fortunate that I know one person as opposed to, that's a downer way to start. Fine, Adam, how are you?
It's reality. We've been on the MechCast here. The way I put it was, we're not avoiding the topic, but we're not focusing on it, right?
Yeah.
Because we get that all day and from other sources, and this is supposed to be an escape. And part of the reason I wanted to reach out to you guys is a number of people have been asking what's been going on, and I thought, hey, we need to get the band back together. It turns out we were trying to get David Sparks on with us, but unfortunately he couldn't make it. So we're back to the original Three Amigos. It's like we've been doing this for I've been doing it for about 15 years. I think you guys about the same, right?
Well, started doing it, 2005 for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, 2005 for me as well. 2006 for macOS Ken, but I was doing the show with Scott Shepard before the summer before that. So yeah. 2005, yeah.
We're veterans.
But not not consistently like you two animals. You two are truly, truly podcasting animals.
It's like the reunion tour right now.
Right.
Like the Traveling Wilburys, but not traveling.
But not traveling. Just staying.
This reminds me. Guys, I just had a flashback to San Francisco at 11 o'clock at night, little diner, and just the great little hangs we would have there while eating something we probably shouldn't have been eating or something. So it's really great to hear both of you.
Yeah, Macworld. What was that? They had a bunch of those, right? Was it just a Ruby's? I don't remember.
It was Lori's.
Lori's.
I think it was Lori's Diner. Yeah, I've got that picture someplace.
That's right.
Tremendous amount of fun.
Everything lives in photos forever, or iPhoto back then.
Something like that, except I can't find the one where Victor is giving me the finger. I can find the one where Rod and Julie and I are giving whoever's taking the picture the finger. But then there was one where I was making eyes at Victor, and he's flipping me off.
Is that not built into the AI, like detection? You can't just search the finger?
Apparently not. No, it's probably on a couple. It's probably a couple of Macs ago, honestly, because that would have been before iCloud and all that.
flipping
I'm
the bird.
I'm just telling you, you're number one. That's all. That's all.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, if I say if I try the bird, I just get pictures of birds. So,
boo.
Doesn't work. Oh, yeah. So I was telling you guys, I really don't have a huge agenda. I just wanted to get together and hang out and chat with some friends and geek out on technology and stuff like that. I do know that one thing we've been discussing a lot here on the MacCast is Apple TV Plus and Apple's shows and sort of how that's playing out. Because, you know, a lot of us now, we've got time to watch stuff. And you've got Netflix and Hulu and all those other things. And we had a conversation just about the amount of content, I think, that Apple has. And they seem to be doing all right. And I think where I came to the conclusion is because I've been watching a number of their shows. And for me, they're kind of living up to the quality, not quantity thing. But I also think I haven't kind of felt like anything that I've watched over there has been like a breakout hit. It's all really good, and I've enjoyed everything that I've watched, but there's nothing that yet has really blown me away. And I don't know if you guys are Apple TV Plus subscribers or if you're watching any stuff or what, but
there's a lot of stuff there that I feel like I should watch, but that doesn't mean that I am.
Mm-hmm.
The only shows I've completed, I think, are The Morning Show and Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet. And Mythic Quest makes me wish that we were still doing 26 episode seasons, because I loved that show. That show, to me, like people are sick of hearing me say it on my shows, but I miss those characters. I want to know what happens with Poppy and with Ian and, you know, CW, and I can name them. I can barely name characters, honestly, from The Morning Show at this point, because it's already sort of faded out a bit. I love those characters. I want to hang out with some of them. I want to talk bad about the other ones. And, you know, that to me was just an absolutely amazing show. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, I was very excited about Dickinson, and I don't think I got past episode 2.
Huh.
I was never excited about C and still haven't been drawn to it. Amazing Stories, I know I'll go back and watch at some point. I will say the other one that I was really impressed by was the first episode of Little America, but it made me sad.
Yeah.
So I haven't gone back and watched the rest of them. It was amazing, but just talking about it, I can still remember like what a heartbreak that first episode was. And so yeah, it turns out the first part of the winter I wasn't really into heartbreak, and now I'm really not.
Yeah, not more now. Yeah, Dickinson was great for me. I really enjoyed kind of the spin on that, but I may be biased because I've got a teenager who is very much into literature and wants to be a writer, and so it was kind of fun to watch that together. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably a little biased toward that one, but I thought it was kind of clever and smart and funny. And I agree with you with Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet, which is funny because, you know, the fact that I think that's put together in conjunction with like Ubisoft, right? So it's like a video game company and it's about video games. And I'm not that much of a gamer, but I really did.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy how the whole thing was put together, and it just was smart and funny and fun, I thought.
I've enjoyed things like The Banker. The movie, you know, was fantastic. It was so well.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, so well done. And then the other one is the documentary Home, which I've always loved architecture, and they just do an incredible job of taking you inside these amazing spaces, and it's just so Apple-like. You know, to have this aesthetic be put onto film, and you know, it just gives you a real envy. It's like, I want to go see those houses in real life. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got sucked into that too. What I love about it is that it's not just a show about houses. It's more about the people that are living in them, the people that create them, and you know, so it's not your typical. I do watch a lot of those kind of home shows,
sure,
where they just show you incredible homes, but this one's got more of a spin on the people and the creative process, I think, than the actual. I mean, there's still a lot of the architecture, which is great as well. But it doesn't feel like the core focus, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it really goes to the whole form and function thing. It's like, oh, you know, this is built this way because this is our lifestyle and we do X, Y, Z. So yeah, I really loved that. Yeah.
Yeah, and just last night I watched the Beastie Boys story.
Yeah. Oh, how is it?
Oh, I liked it. It's really. I don't want to give away too. I don't know if I should give away too much. The format isn't what I was expecting. Let's just say that, and it works really, really well. So okay. I don't know how much you know about it or not, but
I know very little about it. I mean, I like Spike Jonze a lot, and I like the Beastie Boys.
Yep.
But you know, so it seems like it's going to be a notch for me, but I just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I was listening to Beastie Boys all day today because of it, of course, but it's just like, it reminded me how deep their stuff is in terms of styles and the different sort of eras and generations of their albums. And I had kind of forgotten about that because being a child of the 80s, for me, it's all about License to Ill.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really are kind of amazing because, like, Hello Nasty, I thought was an incredible sort of reinvention in a way, but I want to say it was between whatever album came before that and Hello Nasty was when they did the end sound from Way Out. Do you know that one?
I don't remember. Yeah, I don't know.
It's just all instrumental. It's all instrumental. They actually use one of the songs, I believe, in Iron Man, either Iron Man or Iron Man 2, when Nick Fury goes out to see Tony in the middle of nowhere, and Tony's like hanging out in that giant donut sign or whatever.
Right.
That's a Beastie Boys thing, but there's no rap. There are no words. It's all sort of like lounge sound in a way, which is nothing you would have expected from those guys. Right.
They talk about the fallout with Def Jam, and then that transition into that. I think Paul's Boutique was the next album, if I'm remembering right from the documentary, and then moving on. Yeah,
I'll check that out. If I can make a little right turn, since we're talking about music, a show that I stumbled upon on YouTube just out of happenstance, and I had never heard of, called Spectacle, and it's Elvis Costello. It's a Canadian British show. And he does these one-hour-long interviews with, you know, Elton John and James Taylor and Tony Bennett. And they just talk, and there's some performance. And it's just an amazing way to spend an hour with some of my favorite artists, certainly. So if you haven't checked that out, it's called Spectacle. There's a couple of seasons, and they're just wonderful. Wonderful. Hmm.
Is it just straight up, like, free YouTube, or do you have to be on the YouTube Red thing?
Well, you know, I think it's free, but I do have the premium, so I don't know. But I'm sure you can find it. It's probably playing in some other venues. Again, it's a Canadian show, and it's done in front of a live audience and a really super high production value. And it's just wonderful because it's just these deep, deep conversations, you know, about music and about these artists that you normally don't have. And then, you know, along for the ride, you get these great performances. Like, for example, the day I watched The Police, they did the reunion tour, and the night before they finished forever, they did a performance and an interview in this show, and it was wonderful just to hear those guys talk reflectively about their careers and about ending it, about saying, this is it, we've done this, this part of our life is over.
That's an old show, because that tour was in 2008.
That's right. I think this was 2008, 2009 when this show was out. So
okay.
I bet it's cool. Out there for free. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. So what do you guys think in general about Apple TV Plus and just where it's going and the longevity? Oh, by the way, Ken, I did want to comment. I had really enjoyed, although it's way too short because I think the season might even be done. Amazing Stories. I thought it was great.
Okay. Yeah, the season's done. I want to say there were either five or six episodes. Yeah, it was a very short run. Yeah. All right, I'll check it out. I mean, the first one was okay. I'm in this weird place with TV right now, honestly. Like, it's just pretty much all I'm watching is stuff I've already seen. Yeah. And I don't know if that is, I don't know what that is exactly, but with the exception of I did watch Mythic Quest. I hadn't seen that before, and I'm currently watching Future Man, which I really had almost no interest in watching, but somebody else did, so we are. And it's like, I tried watching the first episode a few times, and it was really just far too sophomoric and like sort of frat house humor.
Mm-hmm.
But then I finally just let myself, okay, well, that's fine. That's what it's going to be. And so it was kind of funny with the occasional, like, that's a really interesting science fiction idea. Now I'm in season two, and there's still a little bit of frat house humor, but they're doing like hardcore science fiction, time travel, weird stuff in season two.
Yeah.
That is kind of blowing my mind. But mostly I'm watching, honestly, mostly right now I'm watching Marvel movies. And I think it's sweet. Because I want, you know, good guys to win, and I don't mind watching explosions. And also I can walk away whenever I want to, I've seen them all a million times.
Are you doing I did this with my other daughter. We watched the chronological order.
No, I'm just watching just whatever I'm in the mood for at the time. Yeah. Honestly, like right now I'm watching Thor because I saw that all of a sudden a bunch of the Marvel movies are available on Amazon Prime again. So Thor was there, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen that in a while. So I watch it for about 30 minutes before I go to bed.
Now you made me, because you said Thor. Have you watched What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh, not yet.
That's my jam.
I'm excited about it, but I have not seen it yet.
Watch the movie first, I would say, and then do the series. It's brilliant. It is just brilliant.
It's, you're right, Adam. It's absolutely brilliant. It's like, it's what's taking me away from whenever I have these weird negative thoughts about stuff. I'm just like, okay, I'll watch one of these and everything is fine. You know, it's so funny and so brilliantly written. I just love great writing, and it is spectacular.
Yeah. Now, did Taika Waititi write that?
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
yes, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. Far
he stars yeah, in the, he stars in the movie, I think, or he's in the movie. I don't think he's not in the TV series, I don't think. Maybe he has cameo.
He has something to do with it though, because I know he keeps writing about it every time when it premieres, I think.
Yeah, he's
or when
he's the writer, producer, he's like the creator of it, I think. But
yeah.
He's directed some. He's been in at least one that I've seen.
Yeah.
So it's great. And that one and the other show like that in that vein that I had never known about because I don't watch regular TV, was Community. I stumbled upon that, and we've been binge-watching that, and it's another fabulously written show.
Dude, that is... So that's the Russo brothers, who, of course, went on to do... At least they wrote on it. They wrote and produced on Community, at least in the later seasons, and they, of course, went on to do a lot of the Marvel stuff, which is why almost everybody who's been in Community, with the exception, I think, of Joel McHale... has had at least a cameo or a bit part in all the Marvel movies, and you'll hear lines repeated again, not constantly, but it's amazing. Like if you watch the Marvel movies and you're familiar with Community, you'll hear lines in the Marvel movies that you heard on Community. Sorry, I've watched Community probably six times through.
Yeah, my wife is a huge Marvel geek, so she gets that. I don't get it as much, but she'll like all of a sudden be like, oh, that's from X movie. And I'm like, okay.
Exactly.
But it's so well written. I guess there were a couple of seasons where the writer got fired and then he came back. And you can surely tell the difference between that.
Yeah. That's,
I haven't watched
that
yet. So that's going on my list for sure.
Yeah, highly recommend that. And if you get through four episodes and you're not hooked, I guess you can walk away. But man, you're missing a lot of great TV. Because I'm done, guys. I'm going to go watch that now.
No, we have to talk about, so what do we think about Apple's future? Like, were they right to get into this? Do they have a longevity in doing streaming content? Is it just a hobby? Like, what, like, I don't know how to feel about it. Like, because like I said, I think all the shows that I have watched have been very good. Like, they would stand up against most content. I just, nothing has been like, oh yeah, you must absolutely watch this. It's like, no, you'll watch this. It's really, really good. It's really well written. It's really well acted. I just finished Home Before Dark, which was fun. It's kind of got more of it. It was great because it was another one that was good. I could watch with my kids and stuff like that. It's got a little bit of a kind of a like a Nancy Drew kind of vibe, you know, mystery thing. It doesn't get too dark, but you know, just enough where it's not not scary. And it was just fun. I mean, it was fun, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, you know, you must see this. It's like, no, if you're looking for something to watch and you want something entertaining and you're kind of into mystery stuff and you want something you can watch with your family, yeah, this is a good choice. You know, and I kind of feel like a lot of the content is that way.
Yeah, No, please, Victor, please.
Well, I just think that, you know, this is so typical Apple that they're just throttling up. They're doing the quality versus quantity. They're, you know, now tapping into a Fraggle Rock, for example, you know, just giving us a little taste of things that we are going to want to watch. And I just think it's very typical for them to throttle up to something rather than just, you know, drown us with content that is a five.
Right.
They'd rather give us some solid eights to tens. And I think that's what they're doing. You know, getting it for free for the first year, that feels like, oh, I wish there was more. But you know what? Just typical Apple for me. Just they're giving us quality, and I'm willing to wait for more if it's going to be, you know, up to the quality. I mean, there's been a couple of things that I've like, meh. But generally, I think they're doing very well, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I wish there was more stuff that absolutely grabbed me the way that Mythic Quest did first and then The Morning Show did. But the problem is they are trying to, I mean, they're also doing the Oprah Winfrey Book Club, and they're also doing Oprah Talks About COVID-19, and they're also doing Helpsters, and they're also doing the Fraggle Rock stuff, and they're also doing the thing for the kids with Dickinson, not kids, but, you know, for teenagers with Dickinson. They're going after the adventure thing with C. So they're not the adult drama channel. They're not the comedy channel. They're not the What's in It for Teens channel. They're trying to be something for everybody. But then the problem might be that you only get a couple of hits, right? For you personally, like Adam sees two things that he likes. Joe Schmo sees two things that he likes, right. And that's fine. And then Jane Q sees two things that she likes. But the problem is you're paying for 15 shows. You're not paying much. Maybe you're not even paying anything at this point. But when it comes time to pay,
right,
are there more than two shows for you? And that might sort of become an issue. But then you and I were talking earlier today, Adam, and I apologize because you didn't want to do it when we weren't recording, but I think I can do it again.
Yeah, you can do it.
The problem now is, and I know we're not talking about it, but the problem now is COVID-19. Because what was supposed to happen was we were all supposed to have this for free, and then we get to the end of the year, and right when it's time to start paying, oh, here comes season two of Dickinson. Oh, here comes season two of The Morning Show. Oh, here comes season two of all these things. You're like, that's worth $5, isn't it? Right. Plus, they've added so many other shows that you can go ahead and stay in. Now we're going to get to the end of our free year and there is nothing new because production has stopped. And so it seems to me if Apple's going to get people to pay, and I have never liked this idea, but now they might actually have to, they may either need to go out and secure other content that's already been out there, but that they can say, this is something that we have either that nobody else has, or, well, you're going to go ahead and keep it because, yeah, you can watch this some other place too, but go ahead and keep this and you can watch it here. Or they've got to extend the free trial because I'm going to be paying come November or December for nothing new because of the way, you know, production schedules and post-production schedules go.
I think they'll extend it. I really, really do think they'll extend it because they're hip to this and they want people to find those things that they can't live without. So my suspicion is that they'll extend it.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that they may have to do that. I don't know where they were at with second seasons on things and production on things either. I guess that would be the other question. Did they have anything that has enough in the can?
It was news back in February that they had to stop season two of, first of all, Foundation stopped and it was in production, which is a show that I am very excited about. Season two of both C and The Morning Show were suspended. And of course, I assume they have not come back. I don't know about Dickinson or the other first round shows.
But I know that For All Mankind was the other one that I was going to mention to you guys. If you haven't seen, it was probably now after Raven's Banquet, it's probably my second favorite thing that Apple has put out so far.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because I you know, I love space stuff, so I really, really enjoyed the whole premise of that show. It was quite interesting. But I think, Ken, what you're saying is going to apply to the industry. It's going to apply to all of our streaming services. You know, we're going to be in this drought of content, you know, come December, January, or whatever.
Well, except that so many other streaming services are based on the past library. I mean, that's the thing. I'm willing to pay $5 for Apple to keep giving me a little bit of new stuff now and again, if that new stuff is good enough to keep me around for the $5. I mean, there's a lot of new stuff on Netflix and a lot of good new stuff on Netflix, but that's not why we all signed up initially. We signed up initially because it was all these movies, right? There was so much stuff to watch, you were going to find something. Well, if they can't produce new stuff anymore, there's still a ton of stuff that we haven't had time to watch yet. I mean, yeah, same thing.
That's the point.
HBO Max launches at the end of May with 10,000 hours of content, they say. And a lot of it is stuff we've seen before, but it's stuff that we keep watching over and over again anyway, like Friends and Seinfeld and The West Wing and, you know, and all the movies and then all the original content that they've either produced and kept in the can or plan to produce once we're allowed to start producing stuff again. So, I mean, so much of what we – you're right. Networks are going to have a problem, Victor, especially. Oh, yes. Like what CBS coming out with this fall or ABC or NBC, but – you know, we don't sign up to Netflix for new stuff. We sign up to Netflix because Netflix and Amazon, same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And like you said, Ken, I mean, Netflix, the advantage is they, like, have the dearth of content, original content, that just, like, you maybe only gotten to, if you're lucky, a third of it, probably more like a tenth of it.
Right.
Unfortunately, they don't live up to the quality thing, in my opinion. Like, a lot of the stuff, I've started a lot of things on Netflix. It just went, nah, this one's not for me.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's the same thing, though, that we were talking about with Apple. That the only thing is Netflix, I mean, Apple's there with a rifle, and Netflix is there with a shotgun. So, yeah. I mean, if you find one thing on Netflix, you might find 10, whereas you find one thing on Apple TV Plus, you might find 2.
Right.
On Netflix, for me, since I'm bilingual, I have found an incredible wealth of Spanish-speaking shows from Spain and from Portugal. And, these shows that most of them, have subtitles, and they're just wonderful. You know, it's just great to see content from other countries. The Heist is an example, if you have not checked out The Heist on Netflix. Incredibly great show about a bank heist. And done in Spain, and production quality, acting, fabulous, just fabulous.
That's interesting you bring that up. I was going to try and move us on from this one, but I do want to bring this. That's a great point, because I know another thing that I've heard from some of my audience, because Apple TV Plus launched internationally. Like, it's available in a lot of countries, and I've had a lot of people from other countries say, great, it's got a bunch of U.S. focused content, but where is all the international content? Like, where's even just the British show? And I think the first one is about to come out, but they're only going to have one.
Yeah, Trying, it's called. That's why I was laughing. I'm sorry, because you said, where's the international content? I was like, oh, well, there's that one about that white British couple coming soon, right? So that's almost an American show.
It's British, yeah. It's like, yeah. They don't have that kind of large international, but it's an international. They launched it as an international service, and that is kind of interesting as well to kind of think about. Like, I know we get so focused on being somewhat, well, being U.S. centric, and you know, it's not something I notice, but certainly the rest of the world notices when you're in 100 countries or 100. I forget how many countries they launched it in, which was great, because usually those countries have to wait for the service, you know, until they can get licensing and stuff like that. But it launched right away. But then immediately people are like, hey, wait a minute. You know, where's my content? Where's the content that's, you know, culturally relevant to where I live? And I think it's a valid complaint. So it's interesting to hear you say that, Victor, that, you know, that is another advantage of having a large catalog.
Well, I say it because it may be something that to non-Spanish speaking or non-foreign language speaking audiences, you know, go out and explore. You may find yourself delighted by a piece of content from India or from Egypt or something that you would never think you would like. But it's really interesting, because the cinematography and the acting, it's really great to see that that wealth out there. And it's like, okay, there's something I haven't tapped into.
Tom Merritt is currently watching made-for-TV South Korean drama. Well, I shouldn't say currently, because he talked to me about it like 6 or 7 weeks ago now, but that was the thing that he found. That's Netflix. So yeah, there's a ton of stuff out there that you can find if you know to look for it and if you're willing to look for it.
And you talk about long series. Some of these Spanish series are 40, 50 shows because they were like almost like a soap opera type format, but not cheesy, but they're incredibly long seasons. So it's like, okay, I've got enough content here for a half of year.
Hey, Mac Geeks, we will get right back to our conversation with Victor and Ken in just a second, but I did want to take a quick moment to thank one of our show sponsors, and that is Purple. You know, technology has improved just about everything, phones, cars, shopping, yet mattresses have more or less been the same since the invention of sleep. But we deserve better, and finally, the mattress has evolved thanks to Purple. The secret to Purple is the Purple Grid. It's a patented comfort technology that instantly adapts to your body's natural shape and sleeping style. Purple is for everybody, no matter how you sleep. Purple is designed with over 2,800 open-air channels and naturally temperature-neutral gel, so you'll never sleep too hot or too cold. The Purple mattress is soft where you want it, firm where you need it, and comfortably cool all over. It's truly a mattress that does it all. The folks at Purple sent me a sample of the Purple Grid technology, and I have to tell you, it's pretty neat. If you apply even pressure across the surface, you can tell that it's firm and supportive. But if you apply more direct pressure to it, it has a nice amount of give. And that says to me that it's really going to be able to adapt and adjust to your body and how you sleep. You can count on resting easy night after night, year after year, because the ultra-durable Purple Grid won't sink or lose shape. Purple is so confident in what they do that every Purple mattress comes with free shipping and returns and a risk-free 100-night trial. To experience the next evolution of sleep, go to purple.com/MacCast and use the promo code MacCast. For a limited time, you'll get $150 off any Purple mattress order of $1,500 or more. That's purple.com/MacCast, promo code MacCast, for $150 off any mattress order of $1,500 or more. Terms apply. And a big thank you to Purple for their support of the podcast. Okay, I want to shift our focus because I want to find out what you guys are doing technology wise these days. Victor, I know you do photography stuff. I know you do traveling around. You know what's got you excited tech wise?
I'll be happy to start that conversation. With me, it's a way, my wife and I have like a split life now where we're 6 to 8 months a year. We're here in very rural South Dakota, and there's not a heck of a lot to do out here. So I've really gotten into my music stuff primarily, and recently it's writing symphonic music or film orchestra type music. Mm-hmm. Subject always fascinated me. Hardware and software is at a point with sampling that you can really, really get some incredible stuff happening. So that is a rabbit hole that I can go into for days at a time. And I'm using an iMac Pro these days, which I love, and I really just like 64 gigs of RAM. I wanted technology to be completely a non-obstacle for me. So I bought some really heavy hardware. I bought these OWC like Envoyix drives that are incredibly fast. So I don't have to worry about the tech part. It's just like get down to writing music or get down to editing photos or whatever, and just everything else get out of the way. And that's been a joy because that for a long time was an obstacle, but no more. So I do an awful lot of that. And then when we're traveling, I have to kind of bring the small version of some of that because obviously we're in a very confined space. So I have a MacBook Pro, and I bring a couple of these fast drives, and I have this wonderful Apollo Twin audio gizmo that is just wonderful. And so with that, I can even do something, in the trailer with a little tiny keyboard or something. So I do that. And then I did want to mention that we're on the road. One of the big obstacles we had a couple of years ago was not having enough bandwidth. We would use, at one point we had an AT&T account for the phones and a Verizon account for internet. and they would throttle us as soon as we got to like 20 gigs or 10 gigs, and it was terrible. We couldn't watch Netflix or anything. But this last year, I bought this Netgear Nighthawk. It's called an MR1100 router, and it's a really small, like old Apple TV puck size. And that darn thing with an AT&T unlimited account of like, I think it's $40 a month. We were using it this last winter. We were putting 200 gigs a month through that thing. And never once did they throttle us. We were in Vegas in Arizona. And it was like, okay, we found the key to the kingdom there. And so I really felt, you know, at home with that. And even back when we came here, we had a couple of winter storms where we lost power. And I was able to power this thing up, you know, and you know, use our phones and stuff with it. So it is something I'll recommend. So, you know, I'm keeping very busy for being in a retired, and but it's just in the ways I love.
Is that like an LTE device then?
It is. It's a 4G LTE mobile hotspot. Yep. And it's only, I think it's, I don't know, it's a couple of $100. At least when I bought it, I'm looking at Amazon now. Somebody wants like $500 for one. But that must be COVID related.
You got, any nothing. New tech in your life, Ken? Nothing?
New to me, but stuff? New to me, but not new. When Apple sold HomePods to Apple employees for $149, mm-hmm. I called a friend of mine who's an Apple employee to find out if he could, you know, cut me in on that, and he did. So I have a HomePod now, but the thing is, I'm really using it for exactly what I thought I would use it for, which is as a great speaker. So it's a fantastic speaker, but I'm not asking it to tell me jokes or tell me stories, or not even talking to it to do reminders or things like that, because it's sort of where I work. Mm-hmm. The HomePod is in the area where I work, so I'm on my computer, or I have my phone right next to me. So I'm not even thinking about it. I'm going to call it to the HomePod and, you know, tell it to put something on my phone when my phone is right here. Plus, that would interrupt the music, which I don't want to do. So, I mean, it sounds fantastic, and I really like it, and I like the possibilities of it. I will tell you, there is one thing that's bothering me, and that is Alison Sheridan was on my show in a few minutes on Tuesday of this week, and we talked about the new Magic Keyboard for the iPad Pro. I don't have an iPad Pro. I have an iPad. I got the 7th generation back around Thanksgiving. So really good deal on like a Black Friday, Cyber Monday deal. But really all I wanted was just to be able to play with the Pencil. So again, new technology to me, not new. I enjoy it when I use it, but I don't have many use cases for it, which is why I didn't go with the iPad Pro, with the iPad, because I knew what I wanted to do was sort of get to know it, get used to it, and figured it would fall by the wayside, which it has. The thing that bothers me is talking to Allison this week, I put the question to her, if I do not have a keyboard for iOS 13.4 or later, are they now developing for the iPad in such a way that that not having a keyboard changes it? That not having a keyboard means I don't understand iPad anymore. Mm-hmm. And she said yes. So now I'm like, well, I got to spend like $150 on like the Logitech keyboard or something, which I don't have to. I understand that. But I have started to feel like the amount of development they're putting into iPad OS, the amount that people are talking about, it's so much more like a computer now. I never felt like not having a keyboard sort of locked me out of knowing anything about iPad. I now feel like there is a gap there that I don't quite understand. But the only reason I feel that gap is because I feel like I need to be able to talk about it sensibly on a show like this one, or on a show like in a few minutes, or, you know, on Mac OS Ken, because I'm not there right now.
Okay. I've got to ask, because that's a weird, to me, that's a weird response. And I'm sitting right here next to a 2018 iPad with a smart keyboard. Mm-hmm. I've been using it or Magic Keyboard, excuse me. I keep wanting to call it Smart Keyboard. Magic Keyboard, and I've been using it. I got it middle of last week. So okay. I haven't even had it a week yet. Mm. And I have to tell you, my initial impression is, and I said this on my show yesterday, that I think Apple had it right. I mean, I think the thing is like it doesn't make it necessarily a better tablet experience, and mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily make a better than my MacBook experience still. Love it. I for the use cases when I'm using it, like I did my show notes on it yesterday, and it did make doing my show notes, which I did with a smart keyboard before, better. I mean, it's a better quality experience. I like having the trackpad and the mouse capabilities, but I think Federico Vitici even said this, it forces you to actually use it in one mode or the other. So in my opinion, what you have is you have a device that now has two modes. It has like a notebook laptop mode and it has a tablet mode, but I don't agree with the fact that Apple has diminished the iPad tablet experience at all in the latest mm-hmm. operating systems, and I don't think they're going to do that moving forward. I think they've enhanced the experience if you want to use it in a non-tablet mode, if you want to use it in a more computer mode, but I kind of don't see it that way. I still think the best experience with this tablet is as a tablet. You know,
well,
typing on it has never been great. I mean, typing on a tablet from the very beginning has never been great. And I think having a keyboard enhances that experience. Can you type on it just fine without it? I think so. And that hasn't changed. So I don't know. That's kind of my thought. That's interesting that Allison said that.
Well, I don't feel like she was saying that you have to have a keyboard to get whatever you want to get out of an iPad. I think she was saying that I no longer understand everything an iPad is or can be. I don't think she's saying if you don't have a keyboard, then you don't have an iPad. I think what she's saying is, because the question I put to her specifically was, do I get it now? Because up until iOS 13.4, I would have made the argument that I get it. If I want to type on my tablet, yes, it would be better to have a keyboard, but otherwise it's fine. And now with the whole pointer showing up on the screen, and with the addition of the magic trackpad, and or with the trackpad, whatever they're calling it, I can't keep up anymore. With the addition of the trackpad and the stuff that they built into 13.4, her argument was, or her answer to my question was, I can no longer just say, well, you just put a keyboard on it. I mean, that there's now enough going on between those two things that I don't understand it if I'm not actually sitting there with it. Now, that said, it's still not what I'm looking to do. I have an iPad. I have a MacBook Pro. I have a MacBook Pro, and that is my computer. And it goes with me to Starbucks back when we were still allowed to do that. It goes with me down to the living room. It goes with me to the area of the house where I work. It goes with me everywhere I do. There's no time that I've said to myself, gosh, but I wish I was typing on something else. You know what I mean? So that's still where I am on it. On the other hand, John Champion, with whom I used to co-host Mission Log, he also had a MacBook Pro. And the thing that he loves to do is take his iPad and whatever Bluetooth keyboard he had at the time and go sit someplace and use that. I don't know why he wants to do that with, you know, two pieces of hardware instead of the one that he also has, but that's his jam. So, okay, that's fine. I don't feel like the only reason I'm even considering it now is because I feel like I'm missing something about that experience. And yet the reason I'm not doing it is because it's not like I'm feeling that any other time except for when I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm not spending the rest of my life going, oh.
Yeah. I'm very much in that John Champion camp. And I have been since I got an iPad with the smart keyboard and now the magic keyboard. I will tell you this. The one reason I really liked that was because the iPad with that case was so light and portable and I could just grab it and it wasn't like I didn't have to like disconnect the cables. Like when I have my MacBook Pro, I have a second monitor, and I don't know how you use yours, so it might come down to this too. I have a second monitor. I have a USB hub plugged into it. I have a Thunderbolt cable plugged into it. I've got all this stuff docked into it, and I don't have like a dock, and maybe that's part of the solution. But unless I have a real reason to want to like undo everything and to like take it with me, it's just easier to grab the iPad. And the iPad with the keyboard is enough where I can do things like take notes and answer emails and do all the things that I normally do when I'm kind of away from the computer and maybe multitasking in the living room, you know, watching a show or just hanging out. And it just feels like a more casual experience. I don't feel like I'm locked into my computer, I guess is that. And so it's more about that experience. And but now with this... with this case, this thing is so dang heavy. It feels like it weighs as much as my notebook, you know, as my 15-inch MacBook Pro. It does not. It's not even close, I don't think, but or maybe it's within a pound. I don't know. It supposedly weighs almost as much as a 13-inch MacBook Air with this case on here. It's heavy duty. And so I don't know. I honestly don't know if I'm going to stick with this. The typing experience is much better, and I like the little trackpad thing, but it is taking away from... It's interesting you mentioned John's, you know, sort of methodology is taking away from that. I kind of feel like now it's like if I'm going to grab this thing, it's so heavy, maybe I should just be grabbing my notebook and just having a full notebook experience. I don't know. Like I said, I've only had it for a few days, and so I don't want to form a solid opinion of it yet. I think I need to use it for a while longer, but I wouldn't be surprised if you ask me 3 months from now which case I have on here, and I've gone back to the smart keyboard case. Because I don't know if the trackpad adds enough to the experience for me to change, you know, kind of how I use it. I do like, I've always talked about the fact that I always felt like the idea of a touchscreen notebook didn't make sense because it feels very unnatural to go between two planes of interaction. So a horizontal plane when you're typing and then to try and have to do anything else, like make a text selection or something like that, go to that vertical plane. And I've never liked that experience about the iPad. And so this does solve that. But to me, it takes away from it being an iPad. And I kind of feel like, well, if I want just a one-plane experience with a tablet, I should use it as a tablet. I don't know. I get what Allison was saying now. I guess that makes more sense. You know, like maybe you're missing out on all the things that an iPad is. But I don't know that you need to experience all the things that an iPad is. I guess that's where I'm having trouble with that argument. Like,
right.
If you want to just use it like an iPad, like a tablet, like that's a great experience and that's enough. Like,
And you've honestly presented an interesting use case for me because the only things that plug into my computer are power and my microphone when I'm recording.
Right.
That's it. I don't have a hub. I don't have a second monitor. I don't have anything else going on. So, I mean, if that were the case, then maybe that would be the benefit. Although at that point, then I'd probably just want a MacBook Air. I mean, if I had turned my MacBook Pro into a desktop, I would still probably want a laptop to go from point A to point B. Because mostly what I do is audio production. I mean, either writing or audio production. And if one machine will do both of those things, that's great. I guess eventually Adobe may put Audition onto an iPad. And if they do, maybe I'll look at that then. Although, again, it's pretty much going to have to recreate that functionality that I have on the laptop on the iPad. And once we get to that point, then I have to go back again to, okay, is it going to be better or is it just recreating what I've already got? Because if it's recreating what I've already got that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing what happens in that area with actually Logic Pro and the... video app are both supposed to come to the iPad very soon. Full versions of those, Final Cut and Logic. So I'm really interested to see what they do with that because it'll be interesting if I then start using my 2017 iPad in a different way, you know, which right now it doesn't get used for that. I use it primarily as a sheet music device, believe it or not.
That's better than most people. Most everybody I ask say they use theirs as a TV, which honestly is mostly what mine turns into as well. About half the time, yeah.
Yeah, mine's definitely a TV device at night. You know, when I'm laying in bed, that's its primary purpose. But definitely, I do a lot of my show prep on it. I do a lot of reading, answering emails. I do a lot of. working on my show notes, so I have my RSS reader on there. The split screen has really changed that for me, because I can bring up email. I can have email and my show notes in Omni Outliner going, and I can go back and forth, and I can flip over and have my RSS reader and the notes up there. That the two things that have really put me on using the iPad more are that, and then finally not being afraid and deciding to enable iCloud desktop on my Mac and on the iPad. That combined with the Files app, now I kind of have like a real file system. So like I can actually jump in and I have access from my iPad to all of my episodes. I have a folder where I keep all my episodes with all my content for each one of my episodes on my Mac. And to have access to that is awesome. So I can save, you know, my file in Omni Outliner and then drop my iPad in the living room, leave it there, come sit at my desk and boom, you know, pick it up from there, open it up and just start the show because I still record in GarageBand on my Mac. So, you know, I can do all that kind of away from the computer. It just feels like a more relaxed experience. I guess that's part of the thing too with the iPad is like it gets me out of the office, and it may be that, you know, I now have a day job again and I sit here all day looking at the computer, and you know, at night I want to go out, I want to have dinner, I don't want to come back kind of back in here, but I still have maybe some casual work to do, maybe I want to check out some emails, prep some stuff for the show, and I can still kind of do that and I don't feel like inhibited by this big computer kind of being in my lap. You know, the iPad's just a nicer experience for that. So it's really about that for me than it is really what the device is. And I think what I like the best is like those tools and technology have allowed me to kind of be agnostic about which thing I'm working on. I can easily transition from one to the other, and I don't really think about it too much anymore. Which is kind of cool. Now that I'm saying it, I never really thought about it too deeply before.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, I'm a big fan of files. Again, this was all, you know, from the time before. But if I had to print out a bunch of stuff, I liked that I didn't have to, like, you know, put something on a thumb drive or whatever and hand that over to the guy at FedEx, Kinko's. You know, if I was doing a print job, for myself or, you know, for a small group of people or something like that. I like the fact that I could finish it, I could be done with it, and I could, you know, get in the car and drive to FedEx and, you know, open up my phone and email it to them from there, because I always forget what their email address is. But I could just email it to them standing there as opposed to, yeah, I brought this thing, you know, that I'm going to hand over to you. So, yeah, the whole files thing is pretty... I get what you're saying. Dude, I've worked from home too long. Maybe that's it. I settled on a way to do this back in 2008, and with the exception of changing computers a few times from one Mac to another, my way of doing stuff has not changed a whole lot. Maybe I'm just stuck in my ways, Adam.
I think we all are. Again, I didn't really adapt. I'm not leaving the house too much. It's funny, this thing you say about files. Another thing that made me think of is, do you guys notice at some point AirDrop just got good? Like, mm-hmm. And nobody noticed?
I've noticed. I mean, yes, because I use it all the time.
But I talk to people about it, and like somebody will be like, oh, can you like text me that photo or email me that thing, and they've got an iPhone, and I'm like, well, I can AirDrop it to you. And they're like, yeah, but that sucked. That never worked. And I'm like, it works now. Believe me, it works now. I'll show you.
Well, that's what I thought about files at first. You know, I wanted to trust it. I wanted it to work. And then it did. And it was like, oh, this is wonderful that this actually does work. And I just, you know, the whole Apple Cloud thing, gosh, I just remember 2007, 2008, how painful it would be to sync something. And it's so great just to have files there and have a lot of my stuff just wherever I'm at anytime.
Yeah, I do, you know, it's the classic thing where I kind of fought it for a while too, and you just had to give in. Like, I fought iCloud Photo Library, and it was all because, you know, I didn't want to have to pay for more iCloud storage. And I finally bit the bullet and just went with the large plan, because we're on a family plan, so we all share it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go full boat. I got the two terabytes or whatever, and now we just put everything in there, and it's made everything so much more frictionless. But I kind of hate the fact that I still think Apple overcharges for their storage. Like, I think that should be cheaper so that more people can have that experience. And sure. I don't think Apple needs the money. Like, you know.
Have either of you tried there's a function in Files where you can basically do a public folder like you used to be able to do in Dropbox or a shared folder with you, Adam. Yep. I haven't done that yet. So if you have any hints for that, you know, email me later or something. How to set it up.
There's no hints. It's just like you just right click on it and you say, hey, I want to share this thing, whether it be a file or a folder, and then you put in the accounts of the people you want to share it with, and it's just made available. I sent my daughter a file like that just this weekend for the first time.
Does it give you a URL as well in case the person? Okay, great. I'll just have to try it then. I've just been checking to do it. So
I think it just sends them a link, and an iCloud link, and it just lets them access it from iCloud.
Awesome.
Yeah, it works just like you would expect and like it should have done, 5 years ago. I don't know why sometimes Apple is so slow to get to a piece of technology when, it's going to be... I mean, Dropbox was doing it for how long? And it's like, come on, guys. And it was even more frustrating because those of us who had been around in the days when they had iTools and we had it. We had all that sharing before Dropbox, and they took it away. So they often do that as well, right? We had group video chats, and then they were gone for a really long time, and now they're back, but no one cares anymore because everybody else, Zoom and Skype and everybody else, has been doing it for years. So no one uses, group FaceTime.
FaceTime, yeah.
Well, you've still got the problem, too, of is everybody on an iOS device for that?
Right. When are they going to let that one go?
Well, that was... Is that a them thing, though, or is that an other people thing, though? Because I remember when, I guess it was Jobs, right, who announced FaceTime. Didn't he say it was going to be, like, a standard?
Right.
Which, I don't know, maybe he meant this will be the gold standard, but the impression everybody got was this will just be a thing that everybody will be able to use. And, of course, it didn't get... I mean, it's not... Which I assume
wasn't quite theirs, right? I mean, I think didn't they lose that lawsuit? They got sued over some of the technology behind it.
Oh,
I think that was some of the things that slowed it down. That's my memory.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a patent lawsuit, and I think that's partially what happened. I don't think we'll ever know the full story. But I mean, even other things like, they could still do messages for other platforms. Where's that piece? They could kill it with a messaging if they would make
messaging available, to Android. They would definitely kill it. Definitely kill it. So I don't know. I was thinking the other day, Adam, I was watching something and I remember the day Steve Jobs died, you and I were recording that podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, wow, I wonder what Steve would think of where things have gone in 9 years. In all these areas. I mean, you guys were talking about the iPad in a second, and there was such reluctance to using a pencil device, and it would be so interesting just to be able to hear what he would think about some of the things Apple has done, and how they would be in alignment with however he evolved. Anyways, just an interesting thought experiment that I've had.
He would love He would love AirPods. I'll tell you that.
Oh yes,
without a doubt.
But would he love a keyboard that was heavier than the iPad, for example? Things like that just make me go,
Yeah. Yeah. He always had the flip-flop thing, though, too, right? There was never going to be video on an iPod until there was.
Yeah, that's very true.
And then it was like the greatest thing. And, an iPad or an iPhone was never going to have a stylus until the stylus was done right. The Apple way. Yeah. And I think the Apple Pencil proves, this is Apple's way of doing a stylus, and it took them a long time to get there. But I think that almost demonstrates the philosophy, right? It's like we had to make sure the entire thing made sense and worked the way it's supposed to work and was done at the right time and with the right care and with the right software support and the right Like, all those pieces for Apple need to be in place. It's not just, you know, they could have done a stylus from day one, but they knew it wasn't the right thing at that time, right?
Yeah, you didn't have the resolution. You were not. It would have been such a quirky, weird experience back in the day.
And it was, you know, for everybody else who did it, right?
Absolutely. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, just an interesting thought that I had the other day as I was thinking of Steve and thinking.
Yeah, I think he'd be pretty happy. You know, I think even something like the Mac Pro, although I do have to say, you know, $700 for a set of casters, I still can't wrap my head around.
Crazy.
That's just crazy. I really want somebody to explain that to me. Sorry.
Especially with wheels that don't have locks, right?
Exactly.
That doesn't bother me quite as much. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it seems like they could have done a cool thing where, you know, like the buttons on the side, like, click in, you know, the little hubcaps, you might call them, mm-hmm. You know, they could have done a really Apple cool way to have those things lock. Like, it seems like at the very least a missed opportunity. But even still, like, how can a set of, you know, I can get like rims and wheels for my car, it seems like, for that.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Well, somebody would come up with a little caster type thing that you can put it on top of with locking wheels in for a couple $100. Somebody will come up with something like that so that you have the flexibility of having it both ways. Because especially like for film companies and stuff that are doing productions on the road, you know, you need to have some of that flexibility, and having non-locking wheels would be a big deal in a situation out like that in a media truck or something like that. So,
yeah. Well, I think they'd say get it in a rack then, right?
Sure.
Rack version.
Sure. Right. Right.
But you know, I know this is weird. It just trips me out, and only Apple could pull it off and like just be like, "Yep, that's it. That's what they cost."
But boy, they completely. I mean, when I saw that machine and what it can do, I was just like, "Okay, yeah, you know, if you need this, you're done. It's an incredible piece of technology," and they really, really hit it out of the park. You know, certainly not in my budget, but my goodness.
So here's an interesting thing, and we've been talking about this too, related to that. I keep hoping that maybe at some point in the future, there's a mini version of that, like a prosumer version of that, like a half tower that's half the price. But still, you know, got a couple expansion slots in it, got some of that extra, you know, the engineering where you can get in there and you can swap them thing out. You can put some memory in there. You can change things out. I think, you know, the form factor is awesome. And it raised the question is like, where did Apple leave the prosumers, you know, the guys who are real heavy into photography, that don't want to spend $6,000, $10,000, $20,000 on a rig, you know, and or audio stuff. I mean, you're in that group, Victor. It sounds like the iMac Pro fit the bill for you, but you know, what if you don't want the monitor? What if you don't like? They felt like they didn't have a desktop, and I know we did an episode here where Scott Johnson, I had him on, and he talked about his solution for that because he was a Mac Pro. He had owned the trash can one and the one before that, and Jeez, he was in the market for a new Mac when the new Mac Pro, and he had been kind of waiting for it, and it was totally out of his budget. So
yeah, I think the iMac Pro certainly does it. And I, to be honest with you, a really fully loaded regular iMac is just as darn near just as good as far as I'm concerned. You know, I for me, the decision between those two really had to do with the hardware quality and the duration of how long I wanted the hardware to last me. I wanted this machine to last me at least 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it will because of you know, not prosumer, but, you know, enterprise level hardware, which this has, RAM, et cetera. So I think that fills up that gap pretty well. The old computer geeking me, I really hate not being able to get into a machine and upgrade. It still bugs the heck out of me, and I probably should get over it and move on. But that the new Mac Pro, that's what's attractive to me about it, you know, that I could go in there and do anything. So what you're suggesting, even for a prosumer, if they had a $4,000 to $5,000 half version of what you're talking about, Adam, that I could actually go in and do stuff with, yeah, they would take my money because I just love that flexibility. And, you know, I'm looking at my iMac Pro with all of these things hanging off of it, and it's just not attractive, you know, to me. I would I'd rather have something that it was contained. And anyway, so I hope you're right, and I hope they do it. Not for me, because I won't be buying anything for a while, but it's a great idea.
Yeah, where Scott landed was, and a lot of people are landing right now, which is really surprising, but not when you really think about it, is a Mac Mini with an eGPU.
See?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. I mean, you guys are both talking way out of my area. Like, I opened, I changed the memory in a MacBook Pro one time, or put in more memory in a MacBook Pro. And that was like, that I felt like a god. I mean, that's how scary it is to get inside a computer for me. So when you guys are like, oh, I wish I could get in and do this and do that, I want a computer that, I mean, Apple seals it up so I can't get in. I'm like, great. I can't mess up anything. But I was going to ask if the Mac Mini might be that solution, because I know you can spec out a Mac Mini to over 10,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which means you can put plenty of power in that machine. I don't think that's, you know, including $700 wheels. I mean, I know you can put plenty of power in that machine, so does that do the kind of thing you want to? Or is it just the fact that you actually want to be able to pry open the hood and go in there yourself?
Yeah, no, and that's what Scott ended up doing. He configured about a $3,000 to $4,000 Mac Mini, and we talked about how crazy that seemed. Like, $4,000 Mac Mini, like this was the $500 switcher computer. Like, this is what world are we living in right now? This is weird.
But the limitations to me, it was like when I looked at the iMac versus the iMac Pro. You know, I really wanted 64 gigs of RAM, and I couldn't do that unless I went to the iMac Pro version, you know. And so when having to buy it, I had to do this incredible thought experiment about looking 5-6 years out and saying, how much RAM am I going to need given where the technology in my world, which is sampling and music, where it's going, because this stuff is very RAM intensive. So I ended at 64 because it was like I couldn't have gone much higher actually in the iMac Pro. Of course, in the Mac Pro, you know, sky's the limit. But it's really having to have a lot of thought about what you're going to do and thinking 5-6 years out. And that just bugs the hell out of me. I'd rather use it for 2 years, and now if I need to expand because some new magical technology has come, I can just go in there in the guts and whatever. Add a drive, change the drive, add RAM, whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting you say that, but at the same time, you know, depending upon your needs. Now, your needs are a little bit different. I think with someone who's using more professional applications, yeah, you probably need newer technology more frequently. But I think about the Macs that I have in my house and that we're using, and you know, I have a 2011 MacBook Air that one of my daughters uses. We have a 2014 Mac Mini. I have a 2015 Mac Pro, and really the only one that's probably suffering and maybe needing in need of replacement for us is that 2011 MacBook Air. You know, it's still a daily driver and she uses it, but it is starting to feel long in the tooth. But I mean, here we are, it's 2020, right? So that's nine solid years on a computer. That's pretty impressive. Like, it still blows me away that, you know, and I actually have a 2006 Mac Mini that is still running away as a server. I mean, we don't ask too much of it, but, you know.
Well, but even with the iMac Pro that I bought, you know, I was buying two-year-old technology because it's still 2017. I bought it refurbished, got a great deal. But so I already was 2 years behind, quote unquote, from the technology point of view. And then I had to add another 5 or 6 to that.
Right.
You know, look, these are first world problems, guys.
You'll make it easy. You know, like there's guys out there using those 2013 Mac Pros and they're still running way strong and not even showing signs of slowing down. So it's kind of cool that we've reached that point where, yeah, you kind of don't need to upgrade. And I guess that's another thing that Apple, I think, is struggling with right now and starting to realize. With all of their devices, have you guys noticed that, you know, there's been kind of a shift in focus to more of the entry-level machines, you know, in terms of iPads and iPhones, you know, with the new iPhone SE.
SE, yeah.
I keep wanting to call it the iPhone 9.
iPhone SE.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they are going that way.
I wouldn't say more of one. I mean, because it's been, what, 3 or 4 years since the other iPhone SE, right?
Right. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, a lot of the rumors are about, hey, they're going to have a new lower priced this. They're going to have a newer lower priced that. New lower priced HomePod, lower priced. You know, there seems to be this where they've often in the past sort of just not paid attention to that lower end of the market. But I think we're getting to a place just as a society with technology that we're realizing that, you know, we want stuff that is going to last, but not always cost an arm and a leg. It's not that the other part of the market's going away, but I think there's a large part of the universe, and especially Apple's consumer universe, that says, yeah, I do want to buy this machine now, and I want to have it 5 or 6 years, and I don't want to spend a ton. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of folks out there that are in that space now.
And I think some of that trend is going to continue. For example, you know, the MacBook Air that just came out, which is just looks fabulous. I think the first, if it's going to be A14 Bionic that comes out, the ARM processor, that's going to be a lower level machine, you know, a 14 inch or a MacBook Air type machine, or at least that's my belief, that the first one that they'll do will be very consumer oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think then people, I don't know if they continue to keep them as long or maybe they're upgrading more. I don't know where that leads, but I did find it interesting that as I'm prepping my show notes and stuff like that, a lot of the rumors seem to be focused on, you know, cheaper AirPods, cheaper, you know, or not cheaper, it's lower cost, you know, like a lower entry level to kind of reach more consumers. So it seems like Apple's trying to expand that part of their market. And they're not obviously ignoring the pros because they got all the stuff on the high end too, and that's not going away, but it's sort of this shift to sort of broadening that range.
The other trend that I'm seeing too, at least with like my geeky friends, that, you know, people like me that used to get a phone every year, it's like, no, I don't need to do that anymore. Yeah. You know, I think I've had my current phone for 3 years or something, and it's just fine. I'm not itching to get the latest and the greatest anymore because it's powerful enough, and it just does what it needs to. And maybe that's just me getting a little older and not I don't have to do it for a living like you guys do. So I don't have to have the latest and greatest all the time, but it feels good not to have to be worried about that all the time. Coming out, you know.
I'm pretty sure that's the death of the $200 subsidy. I think that's, I mean, because I didn't need a new phone any of the times I got a new phone, and I was doing it every 2 years. I was spending $200 because that was, you know, that was the deal that was offered by AT&T at the time. And of course, that became the deal that was offered by every carrier. Mm-hmm. And then when they went away from that deal, then all of a sudden you have to think about it because it's much harder to spend $700 or $800 anytime than it is to spend $200 when, you know, like clockwork, every 2 years you're giving that $200, you're getting back a new phone. I'm curious, I'm still actually stuck on what you were saying a minute ago, Adam, and I'm wondering if we look at it historically, and I'm not saying if we do look at it historically, this is what happens. I'm wondering if we look at it historically, I mean, have we not seen that already? I mean, the Mac used to be prohibitively expensive, and then eventually they started coming out, you know, in the more vibrant colors and the more fun styling, and the price started to come down a bit, and then there was a range. Not like in the 90s when there were like, you know, 68 different kinds of Macs you could get. But I mean, same thing with the iPod. The iPod came out and it was, for a lot of people, prohibitively expensive, but it was also incredibly cool. Then their price started to come down and they started introducing new models and you started getting into the lower range as well. And it feels to me like that's just sort of what happens. I don't know that I buy the whole idea of the lower cost HomePod, but I wouldn't say it's really a shift in focus for Apple at that point because they have entry-level computers and entry-level iPhones and entry-level iPods before that and certainly entry-level iPads as well. The one thing, though, that maybe is the wild card in the whole thing, or the one thing that you might say there is a reason they're focusing on it, is India.
Right.
It's the next obvious great growth segment. There's a billion people in India with not a tremendous amount of expendable income. I mean, and obviously there are a lot. That's the weird thing. It's a billion people, most of whom don't have a lot of expendable income. But then if you've only got 10% that have a tremendous amount of money, you're still talking about an inordinate number of people who have more money to spend than, say, disposable income here in the States. Like, even that small percentage of that huge population ends up being as much of an addressable market as we have here. And then if you go for, you know, the next tier down, you're going to need something like an iPhone SE. You're going to need a lower cost iPad, HomePod, excuse me, or a lower cost iPad as well, if you want to hit that, or if you want to actually, you know, have people, you know, buy your stuff there. So I'm not 100% certain. It's a new focus, new for HomePod. No question. I shouldn't say no question, because we don't know that it's going to happen.
Right.
New for HomePod, let's say. But going back, I think we can point to different places and say, okay, well, that used to be ridiculously expensive. And then this was the year that they sort of iPad for the rest of us.
Maybe it's more about the focusing of where, you know, maybe I have some myopia, right? It's like, I often am focused on the next latest and greatest thing, or Apple, you know, kind of here's the big shiny thing that we're really promoting and talking about and things like that. And it just feels like maybe those lower end products are getting a little more attention and love, and it's maybe more on the marketing side or the news cycle. I don't know. It that's what's feeling different to me. But I think you make a valid point. They've always had kind of this range, right? We've always had some kind of an entry level product at some level in the various lines, maybe not at first. Like, I think the iPod's a great example of that, right? It started out as one thing that was very expensive and pricey for most people to justify, and then over the years they sort of broaden out the range. And maybe it's just that we don't have that one new product that only has the top of the line, you know, because we haven't had kind of a new consumer piece other than maybe the HomePod in a while. You know, Apple Watch was the same way, right? It came out, we had $15,000 Apple Watches, and we had, you know, $500 Apple Watches, and now, you know, you can get them for $200, I think, you know. So, yeah, maybe it is just that cycling of how Apple does things, too. Well, cool. I think this is probably a good point to wrap things up. I know it's getting kind of probably later for you, Victor, so we appreciate you, you know, staying up and agreeing to hang out with us. This was really fun, guys. Like I said, when I reached out to you, probably should have done it sooner. Missed talking to you guys. I know it's been a while since we've done one of these, so I appreciate you both kind of agreeing to come on and chat and just hang out for an evening. It's been really nice for me, so thank you.
Yeah, it's been a tremendous amount of fun. Thank you for putting us all back in one virtual room.
Yeah, it's fantastic to hear both of you, and I miss you guys as well. And you know, I miss podcasting. It's nice to get out and put my voice in front of a microphone. It's been a while since I've done it. I'm glad I can still conjure up an idea off the top of my head.
you've done very well, Victor. You haven't lost your touch at all. I can say that for sure. I don't know what's going on, because again, we haven't talked in a while, so I don't know what's going on in your guys' lives. I know, Victor, you mentioned, you know, you're kind of getting back into music. I know you've done music projects in the past. I don't know if you have any going on right now that you want to talk about. And then, of course, Ken, I don't know. It sounds like you got some new things going on and other shows and things like that. So you guys want to talk about any of that stuff? We can start with Ken and then Victor. I don't know what's going on with you currently. So maybe you can fill us in.
So macOS 10 is in its 14th, 15th year. Don't know. Started in 2006. So it turned 14 earlier this year. So that's happening. I'm still co-hosting and producing a show called The Checklist by Secure Mac, where we're sort of talking about technology, not technology. So we're talking about security stuff tied to technology, obviously. not like the, you know, MIT level. I wouldn't even put it at, you know, 301. Sometimes we stumble into 201. Mostly, though, it's really, it's, you know, stuff about phishing scams and best password practices and the importance of 2FA. Basically, the kinds of things that some of us might need a refresher on. And certainly, it would be a great show for mom and dad, honestly, because they just click on things when they shouldn't. And then the newest thing that I'm doing is a show called In a Few Minutes, which is kind of like this, except it's only like 10 minutes a day. So Monday through Friday, I spend the week with someone. We tackle five topics. And then I take that hour that we talk and cut it up into five shows. So it's a bunch of topics in a few minutes. It started a couple months ago, I think, maybe 3 months ago now. And it's available on iTunes and Overcast and I think Spotify and wherever podcasts are served.
That's really cool. That's just something you came up with, I'm assuming, huh?
Yeah, it's an idea. Thanks. It's an idea that I've been kicking around for a while. And when I stopped working with Mission Log a few months back, I knew I wanted to do something. I wasn't sure what, so I took a couple months to decide. And that, you know, that was something that I'd been kicking around for a year or two, thinking I would actually do it in conjunction with Mission Log, do it a completely different topic. But yeah, you know, it, like I say, it's this kind of conversation. But the idea was that people would listen to it after macOS can on their drive to work. And you can see where the problem came in. But
timing is everything right now.
Yeah, it's still there every morning, and hopefully, you know, hopefully people are listening and liking, and yeah. So in a few minutes, if you'd like to check that out. Oh, and it's been Peter Cohen, Augustrometer, Shelley Brisbane, Allison Sheridan, Tom Merritt, other people, other times, and I will be adding other people in every now and then as well. So yeah, give it a listen.
That's wonderful. Well, with me, it's really just a social media thing. My name, Victor Cahiao. Adam, I'm sure we'll link it on Twitter, on Facebook, on you know, Instagram. And musically, I'm writing all the time. I'm doing really obscure stuff that's more geared towards specific things. If someone is doing a film or a short film and they need something, I'm writing for those kinds of things. And really just learning that. On Facebook, however, if you follow me there, I often pick up my saxophone and we'll play live for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And I'll play with background music and do a little jazz. And that's been, people seem to have liked that, especially with this COVID thing going on. Little mini sax concert. And whoever drops in. And if not, you can watch it afterwards. And that's always a joy for me to be able to perform, because nowadays, you know, there are no gigs. So that's how you can find me. And I'll just add one thing there. Because of COVID, musicians are in deep, deep trouble financially. So later on, if you get a chance, please support them any way that you can, because there's no live gigs. And so there's no income for an awful lot of people. And so just remember all those happy times that they've brought to you with live music, and that right now they're in really deep need. So yeah, I'll end with that.
Yeah. Be careful. My daughter is, like I said, she's a writer, and she's kind of an aspiring film writer, and she's starting to do short films. So I may have to reach out to you at some point.
Let me know. I'd be more than happy to do something for her. That would be fun.
That'd be cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate you hanging out for an evening. Take care. Always so fun to hang out with Victor and Ken. I hope you really enjoyed this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS. You can check out all their great software and get more information at smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You'll find them at backbeatmedia.com. As for me, you can find me on social media. I am on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or check out the Instagram, MacCast on Instagram. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.